I told him 3 o'clock.
Oh, well, he
okay, are we going, Dick?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Hank Weaver welcoming you to another session of Hollywood Byline Coast to Coast and inviting you to listen in on an actual press conference with an outstanding Hollywood star. Tonight, our guest is Celeste Holm, last year's Academy Award winner for the Best Supporting Actress for her role in Gentleman's Agreement. Miss Holm will be interviewed by reporters whose beat is the film capital of the world, reporters who know Hollywood inside out. Let's meet them now as we take a turn around our Hollywood press table and pick up their bylines.
Let's do it over again.
That was a year before last. Yeah. By tomorrow.
That's right.
Who won an Academy Award winner?
Pardon me, I think you have to name the picture she won the Academy Award for because
we're doing that, Sidney.
He's cut it out.
No, Academy Award winner for a role in Gentleman's Agreement.
There's a bug on your collar in the back.
What?
Bug?
Get it.
No one will know.
Right.
All right.
Okay, can I hear us on the record now?
Oh, God, yes. Will you hear it? That's the best part of it. You were going to save that for me, as a matter of fact.
Okay, I want to save
those
all
tapes.
Things.
Can I?
Just for the record.
Are you saving them?
No.
No blow-up.
Sure.
Thank you.
That'll be funny.
Blow-up.
No.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Hank Weaver welcoming you to another session of Hollywood Byline Coast to Coast and inviting you to listen in on an actual press conference with an outstanding Hollywood star.
Tonight, our guest is Celeste Holm, last year's Academy Award winner for the Best Supporting Actress.
Cut it, Irving.
You didn't listen.
Tonight, our guest is Celeste Holm, Academy Award winner. Cut out last year's.
Academy Award winner for her role in...
Gentleman's Agreement.
Academy Award winner for her role in Gentleman's Agreement.
I didn't know.
Nobody told you. How would you know?
Start again.
I was telling you, I forgot that he...
You
just read it.
Start from the beginning or just
for that? No, just there. We'll start from
the top. Let's start from the beginning.
We're running out of
record. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Hank Weaver welcoming you to another session of Hollywood Byline Coast to Coast and inviting you to listen in on an actual press conference with an outstanding Hollywood star.
Tonight, our guest is Celeste Holm, Academy Award winner for her role in Gentleman's Agreement.
Miss Holm will be interviewed by reporters whose beat is the film capital of the world. Reporters who know Hollywood inside out. Let's meet them now as we take a turn around our Hollywood press table and pick up their bylines.
Mikhail Novak, Philadelphia Bulletin.
Lloyd Sloan, Hollywood Citizen News and Movie Life Magazine.
Sidney Skolsky, syndicated columnist, New York Post.
Dar Smith, the Los Angeles Daily News.
Now, before you go away, Dar, to introduce our guest on a more personal basis, why don't you do the honors?
Well, Hank, Celeste Holm came to the top of the entertainment world as Ado Annie, the girl who just couldn't say no in the stage production Oklahoma. Since then, Celeste has been saying yes to some of the nicest offers any girl could receive, theatrical and movie offers, that is. She's bright, she's charming, and she's something of a chatterbox if you let her get going, and she's not at all hard to look at. In fact, all men who have met her wish she really were a girl who can't say no. I think all these qualities are going to come over the airwaves if only we'd start questioning her. If only we would start questioning her. So, Hank, let's get going.
Now, Dar, I'm overwhelmed. I really think I should go now and not say another word. Stop while I'm ahead.
Lloyd Sloan, how about you?
Get started. Celeste, did you originally plan to be a dramatic actress?
No, I planned to be a dancer. I loved the ballet. I started dancing when I was 3. Ballet dancing, that is. And I studied dancing for about 10 years. It wasn't until I went to school in France and had to make myself clear to people who didn't speak English, had to make myself clear to them in another language, that I began to get interested in words. And it was then that I got interested in the theater, the dramatic medium, rather than ballet.
Well, if you studied ballet all this time and you were interested in the theater, as you say, how did you get to be the singing star of Oklahoma?
Oh, how long is this program?
You have plenty of time, Miss Holmes. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you, Hank.
Dar Smith's chatterbox point comes in.
See, here you go. Well, what happened was that I was playing in drama, and I was also dancing with the soldiers at the Stage Door Canteen on Thursday night, which was my night to
howl.
Pass trays. And pardon me, Sydney?
I said night to howl.
I used to remember the musical comedies that would come and give short versions of the show for the guys, and oh, how they loved it. And I thought, oh, if only I could do that. And the only way, you know, that a legitimate actress can entertain soldiers is by taking the whole show and all the other actors and the scenery and the stage manager, and it's quite a big deal. And it's a question whether maybe they want that formal kind of production anyway. So I knew and saw by experience that they loved to hear the sort of informal shows that we gave at the Stage Door Canteen, so I made up my mind I would audition for a musical comedy. And so I told my singing teacher that. I'd been studying singing along with ballet and other things.
Oh.
Because it's a good idea to know how to sing on stage, because it teaches you how to breathe right, so that they can hear you in the last row, even in those big barn theaters. Mm-hmm. So I said to my teacher, did she approve the idea of my auditioning for a musical comedy? She says, well, it's high time. So I auditioned for Green Grow the Lilacs because I loved the book from which the show was made, and I was so surprised and got the job. And then I got to sing for the soldiers.
Sidney Skolsky?
When you say Green Grow the Lilacs, Celeste, you mean Oklahoma.
Yes, it was born Green Grow the Lilacs by Lynn Riggs, and
that's
then
right.
When it became a musical comedy in Boston, it was nicknamed Oklahoma.
Well, now, insomuch as Rodgers and Hammerstein made theatrical history with Oklahoma, and you made a bit of theatrical history in it also, could you tell us a few footnotes about R and H? There must have been some experiences.
Footnotes on Footlights. Great point. Great title. Can you use this, Sidney?
I don't know.
What was the question again? I got taken away with my own
with
gift.
With Footlights and Footnotes?
Yes.
Well, I just thought you might tell us something about R and H.
You mean Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein?
Right.
Well, it's hard to talk about someone that you feel as close to as your own family, and with the same kind of immeasurable regard. They're just wonderful people, and they have a tremendous understanding and courage and humility. Oh, what can I say?
You said it.
You had a great number of wonderful songs to sing in Oklahoma, Miss Holm. I wonder if you'd tell us which is your favorite.
Well,
when Mickey says a great number, she counts up to two.
Well, one for each head. Some people count on their fingers.
Oh, that's lovely, Mickey. Well, I tell you, all the songs in Oklahoma were so wonderful. I'm not very good a cappella. I really need an accompanist, I think. But I love Can't Say No, and
I love
All or Nothing. Oh, no, it's forbidden on the air. It was banned, in case
not
you remember.
Not the other.
Oh, well, then I need Lee Dixon.
Is that your accompanist?
No, he was the guy named Will Parker that I gave such a bad time to when he was out of town.
Well, look, so if and when they make a motion picture of Oklahoma, are you interested in repeating your role of Ado Annie in it?
I don't know. I hadn't thought about it. I don't think they should make a movie of it, you know.
Why not?
Because there was something so wonderful about the expanse of the stage in that show. The sense of the wind sweeping down the plains, the simplicity of the structure of the scenery. It had a Grant Wood and an open air thing. And I think that if you really put it in the open air, I wonder if you could get the same quality of open airness. Now, that sounds like a contradiction.
Yeah. You mean it might become just another Western?
Yes, it might. It might. And, of course, you'd have to put horses in it, too.
True. Well, maybe
there is nothing wrong with horses, though.
No, except that I wasn't used to them in Oklahoma.
Well, how is it when you did get into pictures, though, after the success as a singer on Broadway, that you switched to dramatic roles?
I love that.
Hollywood?
I switched.
Well, how is it they switched you?
I was under contract with a studio, and
how did the switch come about, let's say?
Well, I had done two musical comedy pictures,
One of them was Three Little Girls in Blue, and the other one was Carnival in Costa Rica. The scenery was beautiful in there.
That should have been left out in the open air.
It certainly should have. You know, every time the actors came on in that picture, it was an interruption to the scenery. So lovely. Well, anyway, after we had done that, why, I was offered to... Mr. Moss Hart asked me whether I had read the book Gentleman's Agreement. And I said, no, I hadn't. And I went out and bought a copy, and I read it. And I called him back, and I said, I've read it. I said, which part? He said, Anne. I said, you bet. And that's how I got into Gentleman's Agreement. Then I guess they forgot I could sing.
Well, then you did switch yourself, though.
She
bought
a
book. Well, yes, but I didn't... I bought a book. Thank you, Hank. And then things happened. I would like to sing again. Pardon me, Mickey.
Go ahead. You would like to sing again.
Mm-hmm.
I like you as a dramatic actress, if I may say so.
I'm so glad to hear you say that.
I particularly liked your role as the very sweet and talented nun in Come to the Stable.
Oh, thank you.
Do you play tennis as well as you were supposed to play it?
Yes, I do now. But a funny story about that. The production department called me and asked me whether I would, whether I knew about this role that I was playing in Come to the Stable. And I said, yes, I did a little. And they said, I hadn't read the script yet, but they said, you know, you have to speak French in it. And I said, yes, I know. And they said, not only that, you have to speak English with a French accent. And I said, yes, I know. I know the producer. And so they said, well, we'll send you a coach. I said, oh, do you have to? And they said, well, could you do it without a coach? And I said, I think so. I spoke French in my first picture, Three Little Girls in Blue. And they said, oh, you did? And
it was made at that studio, and they wouldn't have seen it.
Oh, is that it, Sidney?
That's how it goes.
Oh, I see. Well, anyway. So they said, oh, and then they said, you know you have to play tennis in the picture. And I said, yes. And they said, of course you play tennis. I said, no, I don't. You'll have to send the coach for that. So they sent the coach, and I played tennis.
Who was the coach?
J.D. Morgan, who teaches tennis at UCLA. And he's just wonderful.
Does he speak French?
No, it was not the same guy.
It was such an interesting...
This world of specialists. Mm-hmm.
Such an interesting sight with the nun's habits flowing and these wonderful tennis shots. It was quite an exciting bit of business.
Of course, the only trouble is I play better tennis in a nun's robe than I do without.
Gorgeous Gussie
look
out.
But you look better in shorts. Lloyd Sloan, we're back to you.
Celeste, you recently completed, a couple of PA tours within the last... 6 months or so, didn't you?
Yes. Well, actually, it was sort of one with a pause in the middle for refreshment.
And then another. I was wondering what...
Sponsor.
What kind
mention
of an act...
something. Maybe we'll get a sponsor.
Yes. Coca-Cola. Go ahead.
Where was I?
Pause the refreshment.
What kind of an act did you do on the tour? Did you play tennis or sing?
Oh, no,
or...
no. I sang.
Well,
when
you say what kind of an act
did you do?
Yeah. Well, or what... How did you phrase that?
You mean bring it in? All right. I was just wondering, what kind of an act did you do? Did you play tennis or sing or what?
Well, I sang and talked to the audience. And
that way?
Sometimes. And tried to perhaps get to know them a little bit after this session in Hollywood, where, of course, I've been away from an audience. And...
Did you get audiences?
Yes, I did. I was
well, how did the audiences receive this act, Celeste?
They liked it.
They did?
Yes.
Wasn't there something that happened about you catching a cold?
Oh, yes. Well, I caught a cold at the Paramount Theater.
Why was that?
It's drafty.
It's drafty. And what were
and
you wearing?
And, baby, it's cold outside.
Inside?
And so it was cold inside and out. And so what happened was that I had what I considered lovely evening dresses. That is, I'd picked them out because I thought they were lovely. And then when I caught a cold, I wore a pink Angora sweater, which I had made backstage during the shows, and a black velveteen skirt. And they liked that better than the evening dresses because it was less formal.
And is that the only reason they liked it better?
Well, have you any other ideas?
I have them, but they're private.
Okay. Well, thank you.
I don't think they're private. I think Lana Turner proved it, that... You only get out of a sweater what you put into it, and I guess you did.
That's very cute.
So, Celeste, did you find a great difference between these movie audiences that you were before on this tour, that you were doing your act before, and the stage audiences that you had known on Broadway?
No, except that I didn't think that they expected me to sing.
I knew that, they told me so. I mean, the people who would come backstage and stuff. They said that some of them, of course, had never seen me on the stage before. And I think they sort of expected me to do monologues. But they seemed to be glad.
Did you have any problem with any hecklers while you were there?
No. Some of them asked me out on dates.
They did?
In the audience, yes.
Did
I didn't go? No.
Why?
Well, I didn't want to establish a precedent.
I thought you'd really want to get close to your audience. But did you learn anything else from them? I mean, it might help in making pictures again. I mean, after you got away from the stage, now going back. The sweater routine, you'll wear a sweater in your picture, won't you?
Only, again, the fact that audiences are basically completely honest in their reactions. Which I'd known before, but it's nice to hear it again.
That's right.
Mikhail Novak?
Miss Holm, I understand the Theater Guild has been giving you come-hither looks. Are you going back to Broadway?
Yes, I plan to. There is a play that I'm most interested in, and we're preparing it for the fall. Not, however, with the Theater Guild.
Is it a musical play or a straight drama or comedy?
It's comedy.
What?
I hate to say a thing is a comedy, because that's like saying, and now we want to introduce that very talented, that amazingly wonderful, that the funniest person. And, of course, then how can anybody be funny, you know?
Matter of fact, we were having a discussion about that before. You just tell us, Sidney Skolsky and I, was Oklahoma a musical or a musical comedy?
It was a play with music.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
Well,
so I said it was a musical and not a musical comedy.
Well, it was a play with music. We can both leave.
No, you leave.
I like you both.
Before you leave, Lloyd, I think you've got a couple more questions.
Well, I was wondering...
Can you ask it again, please?
Before you do leave, Lloyd, I think you have a couple more questions.
Yeah, I was wondering, Celeste, what you think about television as far as your future is concerned, or let's say the future of television itself. Are you making any plans for a video?
No, not yet.
You have done some television
yes,
shows.
Yes, I've done three television shows. I feel that, of course, the medium has infinite possibilities. I don't think I've ever been more terrified than I was on television for the first time, because we rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed, but I still didn't feel as if I'd had enough rehearsal. Now, that was probably because I wasn't used to the medium, because actually we had plenty of rehearsal. But then, at the same time, we rehearsed without the cameraman, then we only rehearsed with the cameraman one day. And he's got to change everything, because it isn't quite the way he'd expected it to be, and so forth. So a lot of the rehearsal is, I think, time might be saved if we'd had the cameraman at the rehearsals. Mm-hmm. However, I think that eventually, of course, it'll probably be just magnificent. But now, I still think it's in a very developing, stage.
I hope the KECA TV people aren't listening. They'll probably be very unhappy with all
this. Do you think so?
I don't know.
Oh, I think it's wonderful to know that your child is talented.
He's growing.
And so growing, exactly.
What was that description of television you told me once after your first show? I don't
know. Oh, you mean it's all summer stock and fall never comes?
Oh, very good. Sidney, I think you wanted to ask a question there.
Well, I'll ask. Talking about television, Celeste, and your experiences, do you think then that television should be on film?
I think so, yes. I think that the greatest degree of perfection can be gained by putting it on film. I don't think, for instance, for a thing like this program where we're all sitting around at a conference table, this would be fine on television.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we don't care how we look. I mean, on some programs, people look wonderful, and on others, people don't look wonderful.
Well, I found this out about...
This is no secret, is it, Lloyd?
No, you have to be wearing that sweater, though, that you're talking about. You're not.
Yes.
I found this out about television from looking at it, that the homely people look good on it, and that's why I'm for it, and that the good-looking people don't look so good. You watch it, and you'll see.
Yes. Well, the thing that I was thinking is that for certain kinds of programs, film is wonderful. For ad libitum programs, television is fine just as it is.
Well, then Hollywood will have to recognize TV pretty soon and admit that it's around.
Yes. Don't they?
You know they don't. If you run the contract...
Well, I've been away.
Oh, Sidney, I'm bored with television. Can't I get personal with Miss Holm?
If you wish.
If I may.
Oh.
Miss Holm, I understand you have a couple of children. What are their ages? What are their names?
Well, this is the only thing I don't talk about. I'd rather not do this.
Then I'll withdraw my question and ask you something equally personal, but
all
not
right.
concerning your family.
That's good.
Nikki, rephrase, dear. You just don't want to talk about the children.
I don't want to talk about the children. Because it's the only way to have a private life is not to talk
well,
about
do
it.
Well, why don't you say that?
She did. She just did. Well,
let's let Nikki ask it again.
And you say that
I
answer.
Think that's a very good reply.
All right, fine.
And then I'll
I don't want it to sound...
good. That's
right,
good.
You know.
No.
And then I'll come in on top of it with the other thing.
Whatever your phrase was there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Go ahead. Thanks, kid.
Oh, that's right. Like that?
We're on.
That's the best answer we've had tonight.
Do I say I'm bored with television?
Thank you.
We all get
okay, bell. Here we go again.
Do I say I'm bored with television or I've said that?
Leave it alone.
Okay.
What's that?
I understand you have a couple of children.
What? We just want to hear.
Okay, I understand you.
Ms. Holman. Ms. Holman, I understand you have a couple of children. What are their names and their ages?
Mickey. Can I call you Mickey when you ask me a personal question?
Oh, I don't like what's coming when you're that sweet.
One dame to another.
No, I feel that we who are so much in the public eye, the only way that we can have a private life is not to talk about our private lives. Because then when you talk about them, they're not private anymore, are they?
You have a point there.
Well, Celeste, I'd like to get personal in another manner. The last tintype I did about you, I said you slept in an old-fashioned bed in an old-fashioned nightgown under an electric blanket. Further...
Now, there's a contradiction, isn't there?
Further, I said that your husband didn't have to turn on his section of the blanket. Do those things still go, or have you new bed habits?
Why, Sidney, your research is amazing. Known for accuracy.
Well, now you tell us.
You're right.
Thank you. That's all I wanted to hear.
Nikki?
I hear you made the very elegant ball gown that you wore at a recent Hollywood function. Do you do much dressmaking for yourself or designing?
I like to.
That Mickey's getting personal again.
I like to. I love to sew. But you know how it is about sewing clothes of your own. Why, two things you make will be just wonderful, and the third thing... looks like, well, not very loving hands at home.
Oh, that's frightful. Well, this particular gown I mentioned looked very lovely.
Yes, it did
you.
Come out well. I've discovered that the best way to make clothes is to try to keep them very simple. If you keep them simple, you have a better chance of success than if you try to get very, dramatic
elegant.
And side-sweeping and so forth.
Do you design these yourself?
Yes, by sort of taking patterns, the top of one and the bottom of another and the sleeve of another. And
well, you're a many-talented gal.
Thank you.
You do a lot of knitting, too? You mentioned that sweater.
Yes, I'm hooking a rug now.
Good heavens.
Dar Smith?
Celeste, you made a very funny crack, it seems to me, when, in reference to your picture, Come to the Stable. Would you mind repeating that for us?
In reference to Come to the Stable?
Yeah.
I don't know where you are, dear.
Maybe she made a funny crack.
No, I think you'd better make it.
It had to do with you and the other star of the picture, Miss Loretta Young. Weren't you credited with saying, I am the girl who is slightly out of focus?
Oh, gee, yes. I'm sorry we told it that way. What happened was that someone asked me to describe my part and Come to the Stable, and I said I played a nun, and he said, yes, I know, and he said, which one? And I said, oh, the one that's a little out of focus. Because it just happened that that day's rushes, there had been a close-up of her talking to Miss Lanchester in the foreground, and I... slightly out of focus in the background. But it sounded much more, sharp than I meant it.
Meowish?
Yes.
Sidney Skolsky? Excuse me, Lloyd Sloan.
Celeste, you made another crack recently, as long as we're on the subject. In fact, this gets back to television, if Mickey will forgive me.
I might.
You said that the big, showy movie houses around the country would probably be dead within 5 years as a result of the rapid growth of television. What did you base this on?
The fact that business all over the United States is not what it was.
Yeah, but why particularly the big showy movie houses?
Because I don't think that people want to can afford paying the kind of money that the big houses were charging, and they would just as soon see them on second runs.
Well, I frankly disagree with you. I think...
All right, I'm glad for that because I was going to ask the same question.
Oh, well, no,
well,
I...
Well, let's... Wait a minute, hold it. Let's not get in a discussion of this now. Let's hold it for when Celeste
right.
wants to answer.
Right.
Yeah, let me ask
later.
That.
Fine.
Sidney Skolsky?
Well, Celeste, I don't think every remark you've made should come back to haunt you here, so I'll get you off.
Thank you,
and, I want to ask about a letter to three wives. I think everyone by now knows that you were the voice of Addie Ross in a letter to three wives, or if they don't, they should. And I think it might be interesting if you tell them what a tough job it was to play that part where you were only heard and not seen.
Well, I, of course, adored doing it because I was particularly happy because of the fact that not getting billing, it allowed anyone in the audience to imagine Addie any way they wanted her to be. And that is the wonderful thing where in a story where a certain amount is left to the imagination. And in this case, Addie being the menace, why, it's much better to have the menace envisaged any way that the audience would like to.
Want to picture her.
Yes.
But I also thought, Celeste, that you might tell them how, if I remember correctly now, that you didn't ever play a scene with a member of the cast, in fact, didn't meet them, and how you dubbed in your voice for that role, how you had they had to run the picture reel by reel. I thought that would be interesting. And
yes.
And it was tough.
They run it on on a regular screen, and then you have earphones, and you hear the voices of the scene, and then where you have to come in, there's a sudden chalk mark on the screen. It's just a flash, a red mark across the screen, and then you speak, and you have to get your line to fit in with the rest of the
It must
picture.
Be very difficult timing it.
It is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, it's a great challenge. I love to do it. Because it's hard to do, and when it comes out nicely, it's good.
Maybe we can get Mr. Zanuck to do Letter to Three More Wives so you can have more fun.
How's your agent feel about the no billing?
I don't know.
Oh, you didn't ask?
No, as long as the agent got his billing, the 10%, he didn't mind.
Celeste, I know you've been very active with UNESCO, the educational branch of the United Nations.
Yes.
Are you trying to sell Hollywood producers on doing a movie about this phase of the UN?
Well, I'm not trying to do this as a general extent that I haven't tried to sell a great number of producers or anything of that kind. At the same time, I think it's awfully important that people realize that unless the principles of the United Nations are upheld and shown to the world in entertainment form. I don't mean in a preachment for a second, because mm-hmm. nobody wants to sit in a theater and be told how to think and how to live. At the same time, if the example is good, people are going to have a good time, and it's going to mean something to them. And so, in that way, I am most interested in what they're doing. I do think the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, that the initials UNESCO are liable to be misunderstood. They sound either like a cracker or that dear little country that did so much for us during the war.
Mr. Skolsky, did you have a question on the same subject?
No question. I was
just
going to say...
Excuse me.
No question. I was just going to say that I think it's grand if a picture could be made, but I don't think it has to be shown in this country. I think we're for it. But I think if you can get that picture behind the Iron Curtain, you'll be doing something.
Oh, Sidney, wouldn't that be wonderful?
Mm-hmm. Well, I was wondering if you have had any success, Celeste, if there is any interest.
There is some
producers.
Interest.
Anything you can talk about?
No. That's the only rule I've ever had. It's the only superstition I have. I'll walk under ladders and I'll cross behind black cats, but I will not talk about deals which are not consummated.
Well, Celeste, maybe you have some deals that have been consummated. You've told us a little bit about a possibility of a Broadway show.
Yes.
I think you've got a possibility for... I think you have a possibility for a Hollywood show, that is, a legitimate stage show out here on the coast.
Oh, you mean She Stoops to Conquer?
Yes.
Yes, well, I did it back east for Morris Evans, who sponsored the New York City Center project this winter. And the producers out here in California, Lewis and Young, asked us to do it here in California. And I was all set to do it, and Brian Ahern was going to do it, and Richard Worf was going to do it. And when this picture came up at Fox,
And at the same time, Mr. Ahern could only give a certain length of time. So just at that moment, why the Fox picture came up. So we may plan to do it a little later.
What is the picture you're going to do at Fox?
All About Eve. I know all about Celeste. From blankets to screen.
Why don't we just interview Skolsky?
I'm sorry, Mr. Skolsky, but it's about time to call a halt to the first half.
Well, I didn't think it was so good because he's on the panel.
Well, the next time we'll make sure we can see
it. Little joke, but go ahead.
Do it, throw it in anyway.
No.
Well, I said, why don't we just interview Skolsky?
What were you starting to say?
I'll be damned if I know.
We have a temperamental moderator. Now, back your temperamental moderator, Hank Weaver. Hank, dear, go ahead. Whatever you want to say, boy.
I'm just going to wrap it up for you, Johnson. I'm sorry, Sidney, we can't go on into a little longer interview, including yourself, perhaps, but it's just about time to call a halt to the first half of our Hollywood press conference. Our guest, Celeste Holm, has done a beautiful job answering her share of questions, so in a moment we'll turn the microphone around and, for a change, let Miss Holm ask the questions. But first, let's listen to Irving Howard.
The American Red Cross is a national institution which was founded on the principle of bringing help to the American people who needed it most. To carry out the essential responsibilities of this year's program, one of the greatest in the peacetime history of Red Cross, a goal of $67 million has been set. The six major missions of the Red Cross, including aid during disaster, serving the armed forces, promoting health and safety, and helping around the world, constitute a huge day-by-day job which must be financed out of the one annual Red Cross drive. In making your contribution for this year's Red Cross fund drive, remember, you're not giving to the Red Cross, but through it. Remember, all may help through the Red Cross. And now back to our moderator, Hank Weaver.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to your reserved seat at our coast-to-coast Hollywood press table with our guest star, Celeste Holm. Ms. Holm has just been interviewed by Mikhail Novak, Philadelphia Bulletin, Lloyd Sloan, Hollywood Citizen News and Movie Life magazine, Sidney Skolsky, syndicated columnist, New York Post, Dar Smith, Los Angeles Daily News. Now it's time for our guest, Celeste Holm, to be the inquiring reporter. So, Celeste, turn up your hat brim, put a pencil behind your ear, and make with the questions.
Dick, will you cut the record here, please? We'll discuss this a little bit. I just thought maybe a little
I wanted to read it because I wanted to ask you.
And then you kind of think of some things, too.
Yeah, I wanted to.
That's the first part, and it's 27:30. Now I'll cut it down.
Yeah, the point that I wonder, how many minutes is it?
Well,
it doesn't matter. He can cut that. If this gets good, he can cut from the other end. Yeah. So don't worry.
Now, what I meant was this, that the question that Lloyd started to bring up about this closing of big theaters.
You can ask me.
Can we cut that right out? That whole question that you made?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then let me make
it.
I
get it fresh.
You can still ask.
Oh, no, that's
wonderful.
Thing's too visual?
Yeah, well, I think the thing about...
Yeah, but who can explain this, even when you look at it?
About what we were doing. Okay, Dick, I know exactly. When she talked about what we were doing around this table, television, that's good stuff.
Oh.
People like the picture.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead, kid.
Hank, and now, Miss Holm, Hank has asked you...
He
left it off by saying...
Celeste, what is your first question for the panel?
Oh, I can't tell you what a feeling of power this gives me. It's going right to my head to be able to ask newspapers.
Don't get giddy.
What do you mean, get giddy?
Maybe Mickey will give you one of her two heads.
Let me ask you. How much actual influence on the box office do you think your reviews have?
In a word, none.
None, Lloyd?
Well, it's kind of flip. I don't think so. I think they do have some influence.
You do?
I think there's a mean and an extreme to this question. They're greatly exaggerated by certain people who, say, within the industry, who feel that bad reviews are very detrimental and try to argue that critics and particularly the columnists should be as nice as possible, particularly in a time of recession, let's say, so that business will be improved and that the press will be doing their share to help business. On the other hand, I think there are a lot of people who a lot of average moviegoers who don't think there's a great deal of influence exerted by the press, that don't care for the reviews.
Dar?
Well, I We'd like to think that it has a lot of influence, that is, our reviews have a lot of influence on whether people go to pictures or not, because after all, we are employed by newspapers to report to our people who pay our 5 or 7 cents for our papers, to report to them the value of a picture and what it's about. Mm-hmm. And, of course, this means that we, if this were actually followed, we'd be wielding an awful lot of power. But I still think that it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Michelle?
I believe that a great percentage of the people will go to see a picture starring, say, Celeste Holm or Tyrone Power or Wendell Corey or whoever it might be, if those people happen to be pets, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fact that a review may show the picture is not a good one will not stop them. I think they're going to go to see the picture their favorites are in.
Mm-hmm.
I disagree with all of you. I don't think that the audience these days have such pets. And a Clark Gable or any big favorite can... best example I can think of offhand now is Betty Grable and the beautiful blonde from Bashful Bend. Betty was the leading female actress. She was top box office. She got a bad picture. That audience smells it out. And they don't pet that much.
Mm-hmm. And what... And then, Sidney, well, this has sort of answered my next question. What do you think is the reason for the recession in box office now?
Oh, that's a long answer. I don't think it's only bad pictures. Good pictures isn't doing the business expected of them. And I... Well, you look at me so funny. Why?
No, I was grammar, that's all. I was
I caught myself on the grammar, too.
Excuse me. Yeah.
Should we take it over?
Go on.
Oh. All right.
Except it was wrong the second time when you corrected yourself.
Well, then say that.
Good pictures aren't... Well, now you got me. Pictures isn't doing the business expected of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are many reasons for that. One of them is the time schedule of pictures. People can't get in to see a picture when they want to see it.
You mean people don't eat dinner at 5:30?
People are eating dinner at 7:10 when the main feature goes on, and they're kept away by the picture that's on at 8:30 when they want to go.
Time.
Well, I think, Celeste, it's a pretty normal thing. There have been probably thousands of analyses of this recession, and let's say the every other business in the country has felt the same thing, and they have analyzed it along business lines and realized that there was a tremendous boom during the war, and that this had to subside.
Mm-hmm.
And we are just...
But don't you think it's more than that?
I do and I don't. I think people accepted during the war a lot of things that they're not willing to accept now, so that there is, yes, this basic thing that pictures must be better. The pictures are not as good as they should be. But I also think that it is a normal thing that would have happened regardless.
Mm-hmm.
And that we can get out of it, let's say, that the recession can be ended by production of better pictures.
I disagree with Skolsky. I think good pictures are making money. Maybe they're not making quite as much money as they used to make during the lush war years. Mm-hmm. But we have maybe a list of a dozen pictures from last year that made very good money.
Mm-hmm. Do you think...
But we're talking about today, Daw, and the good pictures. I happen to look at some accurate box office returns and not those returns that are often printed. And the good pictures are not grossing the business that they should or the business that is expected of them.
Of course, this is income tax trouble time, isn't it?
Sidney, may I ask you a question? Am I allowed to do this on your time, Miss Holm?
Yes, Mickey.
Go ahead.
You said that these pictures are not making the money they should.
Or that is expected of them.
Expected on what basis? On the basis of the boom war years or on the basis of pre-war figures?
No, expected on the basis of a good picture in the economic conditions of today. And that is what is worrying the executives of studios today.
Do you think there's a possibility that maybe the pictures have not lived up to perhaps what the public expected of them for such a time that even a good picture has to be kind of not sold? By that I don't mean a lot of hoopla publicity, but I mean that people have to be kind of wooed back by good pictures. In other words, one good picture and another good picture and another good picture, that third good picture is going to make better money than the first good picture.
Well, that gets back to what I said. I think there's what they call in Hollywood the movie habit.
Yeah.
And this is what people had acquired during the war. Then suddenly the switch came. People weren't making the money they were during the war. And they got out of this movie habit.
Besides,
now,
their husbands came home. They had somebody to talk to.
They had somebody else to do. That's right.
Miss Holm, I noticed you taking notes while our reporters were answering your question. Did you get a satisfactory answer to your question?
Yes, I thought so. I have another.
We'd like to hear it.
You interview an awful lot of actors and actresses. And the other night, I was at a party where there were many psychoanalysts. And we got to discussing actors and actresses. And I want to know, because you're all so experienced...
On a couch?
No. Sydney. Because you're all so experienced knowing actors and actresses, what qualities would you say that they have in common?
Rather than say that they are all hams, should we say that they all have a great deal of self-confidence?
Now, do you believe that's true confidence, or do you believe that's compensating for an inferiority complex?
I haven't gone into that deeply. I look at the... necessarily have to look at the surface on a thing like that.
I see.
As Sigmund Freud, Skolsky answering, I would say that all actresses have two qualities in common, or actors too. The qualities are exhibitionism and infantilism.
Oh, boy.
It's rather brutal, Mr.
You've been
Skolsky.
Reading. Besides your own column.
I've been reading, beside Gentleman's Agreement, a book.
Lloyd, do you have any vital commentary on this?
I think definitely that they are, Sidney used the word exhibitionistic, that is a quality that you will always find in actors, but I also think that this is an essential of their profession. Uh-huh. Without that, they would not be actors.
It would make the audience pretty nervous if they weren't.
That's right. I mean, you can't see somebody just sitting there and afraid to utter lines, or when he or she does utter lines, sounds very much as if she is afraid. It wouldn't be quite the personality she's supposed to be portraying.
Celeste the Shrinking Violet.
Mickey? I'm sure Mickey has something to say on this.
No, I don't know if I am going to appear as though I'm rushing to the defense of actors and actresses, but I think this exhibitionism you've all mentioned must naturally go hand in hand with any person who is before the public eye, whether he is a trapeze artist, a bareback rider, or what have you.
Well, Mickey, you're talking about it like it's a bad thing. I don't think so. I've got a bit of it. That's why I'm on the show.
Ah.
Well, I think also, in fact, I did hear a psychological explanation once of the, the infantilism that Sidney was talking about, and that is that most children, when they're young, want to be actors and actresses. They naturally idolize movie stars.
And if they remain
most people
children,
don't grow out of it.
Good
That's
actors.
Exactly it. Exactly, that most people do grow out of it, but uh-huh. that actors and actresses don't. They maintain these childhood ideas.
You might also say that actors have perhaps happy childhoods, which they would like to remember, and where, for instance, they would. I don't think this is a very good answer.
Well, no, that's why animals and actresses.
Now we'll have to go on.
Television.
Television.
I get it.
One question.
Well, I was always under the impression that most kids want to be firemen or policemen or Indians or cops.
And actors.
All right, and actors, Mr. Sloan. Celeste, you have one more question.
Yes, I have. I'd like to get back to the subject of television, Lloyd, whether it is versus films or with films, whether television will be put on films, whether this is going to affect the moving picture industry. It's kind of a big question. You know what I mean, Lloyd.
Yeah,
Have you got a big answer, Lloyd?
Well, I'll let the other members of the panel go into that on the broad answer, but I think what we talked about before, whether television will affect the big movie houses or the small houses, and I definitely think that the big houses will be the least affected for the simple reason that if people have television sets in their homes and can look at movies, I don't think they're going to go to a neighborhood house. This is when television reaches the peak that it is expected to reach. I don't think people are going to go out to a neighborhood house and see the same thing that they are seeing on their television screen. They will, however, go out to a big downtown theater, let's say, to the big show places and make an evening of it.
Hmm.
Well, Celeste, I think you and I have discussed this before, and I think the answer we arrived at was that the good pictures, the really great pictures, would be shown at the movie palaces.
And certainly will do fine.
And will do great. And they will be restricted off of television. And the routine run-of-the-mill films will be made specifically for television.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Nikki?
I don't believe the big movie houses, or movie palaces, as you call them, have the great appeal you think they have. I think, however, that while television is making inroads into the box office of the nation,
and you really do think it is?
Oh, yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Babysitter problems, and et cetera. I do think, however, that the woman of the house is going to demand a night out, whether it's even the neighborhood house.
Sydney?
Well, I think the movies are going through a transition period, Celeste. People are shopping for movies as they shop for shows, and they'll look at things on television as they used to go to the movies. But I hate to prophesize or be a prophet, because I remember when sound came in and Adolf Zukor said that talkies would never go because audiences went to the movies to sleep and talkies made too much noise.
Oh, that's wonderful, Sidney. Well, don't you think perhaps, too, and this is what I hope, that to some extent that the legitimate theater is going to come even more strongly than before, because I don't think that either television or movies are a substitute for that real live performer up there. Do you see?
No, I don't. There's never a substitute for the real thing.
Well, I definitely think the theater will come into its own once again, because people will certainly want to get away.
It's a live show.
Well, I'm terribly sorry, and I hope your questions have been answered, Miss Holm.
Yes, Hank.
But I must play the role of the villain and tell you it's time to call a halt to our Hollywood press conference on the air. But before saying goodnight, our sincere thanks to you, Celeste Holm, for appearing on our program.
I've enjoyed it enormously.
And we'll be looking forward to your next picture. Champagne for Caesar. Our thanks, too, to our panel of reporters, Mikhail Novak, Philadelphia Bulletin, Lloyd Sloan, Hollywood Citizen News, and Movie Life Magazine, Sidney Skolsky, syndicated columnist, New York Post, Dar Smith, Los Angeles Daily News. See you all at our Hollywood press table at the same time next week. Until then, this is Hank Weaver saying good night from Hollywood.
Listen again at this same time next week when ABC, over many of these stations, presents another edition of Hollywood Byline, featuring an exclusive on-the-air press conference with an outstanding movie star, interviewed by reporters whose beat is Hollywood, the film and glamour capital of the world. Hollywood Byline is directed by William T. Johnson and is transcribed in Hollywood. Now, here's a listening reminder.
Yes, dear.
What year did you graduate from Francis Parker?
Thing in you to make dirty things on the air.
Oh.
Well, I was my father was 35.
Oh, I knew that we were early, but
you might have the same time I was. You graduated 34.